I don't believe that anybody feels the way I do. We'll just bring back that. We'll restart the Oasis. Folks, welcome to the Armchair Apex podcast from Austin, Texas to Essex, England, and a little stop in between in Houston, Texas. A quick stop because you're right down the street from me and we're both the same distance away from James. We started earlier, had a little bit of some audio issues, and we started with a full ensemble of Oasis's Wonderwall. And I can't promise you that we're not going to do that again at some point. We're going to catch you off guard. And that's just going to be how it is on this show, because we tell you what you like and you like it. And that's how we do it on the Armchair Apex podcast. And man, we've got a pretty wild weekend. Another race that's happened. That's been just a vortex of activity. And I'm going to put all these objects that are just in my hands down for right now. But guys, how are we doing? How's your week been? James, you said it's snowing in England right now. What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, yesterday it snowed, which is, of course, I mean, it's April, which is ridiculous. And of course, it's brilliant that it snowed today, yesterday of all days, where we had a work five-a-side football match. So I had to sit outside in the cold, in the literal snow for an hour, trying to like network with these other people, but I could not feel about 80% of my body. So not ideal.
That's not at all. I don't tell the weather to cut it out. Exactly. Can you do that?
Stop. I mean, the weather's about as consistent in real life as it is on F1 2021. Like,
oh
yeah. Nice. Jeff told me it'd be blue skies throughout.
Nice. House, but throw a little gaming content in there. We told you we would get to the gaming content on the show, and we just did it. That was it. That was our gaming content for this episode. Was the weather toss up? Aaron, how we doing in Houston? What's going on?
I'm in shorts and a t-shirt, and my AC has been on for a week now, so certainly nice. A little warmer than it is in Essex.
There you go. I'm in my PlayStation shirt because I stand PlayStation. And I'm going to be honest with you, I haven't fit into this shirt for like 3 years. I bought it to play Austin City Limits Festival. And when I bought it, I was too big for it. And then I was like, well, got to lose weight for this. So I did. And then right afterwards, started drinking 6 Bud Light Heavies every night. And then pretty soon didn't fit into it again. And now I do again, because I'm looking like Scott Weiland these days. That's what's going on. Basically the lead singer of Stone Temple Pilots. Anyway, we've got a great show to get to the Saudi Arabia Grand Prix. Let's jump right into it, because the elephant in the room with this race, and we kind of haven't been able to talk about this in the chat, so I'm kind of excited to get y'all's opinions on the overbearing drama of this race and the safety issues on and off the track. And let's just address that right off the bat, and then we'll get to the race. But you know, of course, Friday we had, a missile strike on this, you know, just like 10 miles away from this track at an Aramco oil facility. So like the sponsor that's sponsoring this event gets bombed. You know, a bunch of drivers have a conference late into the night. They're assured by authorities that things are going to be pretty secure. Apparently there's a missile defense system around the city. I don't know if y'all heard this at all. But authorities talked to these guys in the FIA and all the drivers, and we're like, hey, we're good. There's a missile defense system around the track, which I don't know why they don't have it around the oil facility that got bombed, but apparently they have one around the track. So this all coming after Russia, after all those cancellations and things like that. It's a pretty wild thing to witness in real time. And I don't know, probably some potential hypocrisy going on. A lot of things to unpack. What are y'all's initial thoughts on this?
I think that it's not really possible for Formula One to untangle itself from Middle Eastern investment at this point. I think that it's going to continue on this way. Aramco is embedded in the sport. A lot of the Middle East is embedded in the sport. There's major investment from all sides. And I think that, you know, they won't take the missile defense system down for routine repairs during FP1 next year.
Let's not do that. Let's not do that. I wonder if it's like a one of those clear, what do they call those like virtual umbrellas or whatever?
A dome.
A dome. Yeah. Like a dome defense system. I wonder if it's over the whole city or if it's over just the
track. Defense guy was in the bathroom.
Yeah.
When the missile strike happened.
He went on break. James, what are your thoughts on this, man?
And sorry, firstly, when you said dome, I had ideas of like, you know, the Simpsons movie. They sort of put Springfield under like the whole dome of glass. I mean, really, this weekend just confirmed what we all knew, that any sort of attempt from F1 to play morals is just clearly PR. I mean, you know, you can't cancel Russia and let Saudi Arabia slide. You know, Chain Bear made a really good point on this about sort of if we're not racing in Russia because of the political situation. You know, the UK has recently brought in quite a nasty anti-trans bill, and there's no talk about canceling a race there. Or the United States has very colourful history with foreign policy, and they just announced the third race there. You know, I mean, I'm glad that the drivers now are going to have a bit more of a say in where we race and sort of why we race, but I'm not convinced it's going to make any difference, because the drivers are worth nothing to a Petronas or Aramco sponsorship, you know.
Right. Yeah, I think it's a very interesting thing, because it's such an international sport, especially now that we've got so many American races on the calendar, especially for next year. And we'll get to that later. But it's almost inescapable, the politics along with this sport. But at the same time, it's a sport. So you're always kind of skeptical about how much of that should be injected into it. I think that's always a big topic, is like, get your politics out of my sports or whatever. But it's kind of hard to navigate with this one, especially because, I mean, we're talking about an international global thing, almost like soccer, football, whatever you want to, depending on what side of the pond you're in, how you call that. But it's one of those things where it's so globally intertwined. You got the geopolitical landscape just in the background always. And it's kind of fascinating that like this thing is going on while these different events take place. So yeah, I think what you said, James, is pretty true. Kind of trying to cater to the moral messaging and things like that. It just seems like a PR deal. You know,
if Formula One was not going to race anywhere without any sort of like checkered past or inconsistent belief systems, where the hell are they going to race?
Yeah.
Like
it's Canada.
Canada. Canada has its own, you know, its own issues.
Right. Oh yeah. Now. Oh god.
With
yeah.
Natives. God. Like in Switzerland. Like, are they just gonna? Like, yeah. I don't like. I kind of feel like we can all complain about sports washing forever, but it's never going to change anything. Like call me a hypocrite. I'll continue to watch.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. No doubt. I mean, that's the thing, is I'm not gonna stop watching it. I mean, it's 100% over the last 2 years, two years, it's become just hands down my favorite sport, besides maybe golf, just because I have such a history with that going back to my childhood. But I'm not going to stop, but it's one of those things where you're just like, man, you know, how much of this is just so bizarre, you know, as
it's the bullshit that comes out of Formula One and the team principal's mouths immediately after. Just like, I would have so much more respect if Domenicali came out and was just like holding like a giant check, like a Publisher's Clearinghouse size check was signed by Saudi Arabia, than I do him being like, oh, you know, we're perfectly safe here, and this is just like a different culture. Like, it's nonsense. Just tell me, you know, it's about the money, and let's get going.
Yeah. Yeah. That's just be honest about it. You know, it's like we said last episode, who's sitting at home being like, oh, they really do race as one, you know, that's great. It's like, who's watching any of that stuff before the episode and being like, you know what, it makes me feel really good that I watched this, is that I think they do race as one.
Well, we don't even like a large subset of the viewers didn't even get to see the gestures because we're watching on the F1 TV app and they don't even broadcast them.
Do they not?
Yeah.
That's crazy. I think that's
just on Sky Sports.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. Man, and then the crazy part about this weekend is before you even get, you have all this before you even get to the track issues. And you have all of these things going on in the background. You have literally missiles flying in the air from like Houthi rebels and whatever. I briefly read about that conflict, and you know, it's one of those things where history just overwhelms you and you're just like, okay, this is for another day. I'll read about this later. But then the track, almost, you're just wondering there, on Saturday night if the track just killed Mick Schumacher. You know, you're just like, oh, okay, all of this. And then you're just like, did this track just kill Mick Schumacher? What's going on? Because he took a while to get out of that car in the middle of qualifying. And then so you're just wondering about these issues with the track itself, and just no runoff with any of these corners, blind corners. I don't know. Were y'all, James, were you watching the qual? I know me and Aaron were watching and texting back and forth while it was happening, but when did you watch quali Saturday night?
So I watched it about 10 minutes after you guys. And I know that because I checked my phone and I saw a text from Yandro saying like, oh God, please show him getting out.
Yeah.
And I was like watching on edge for 10 minutes. Like, oh God, what's happening?
Oh no.
I don't know. It's a difficult one about the crash because what you would say is that in the race, I don't even think we had a spin or a half spin or anything. You know, the race went as normal. I think a big concern was that it seemed like there was a long time between Mick's crash and anyone getting to him. And if that had been, you know, a Grosjean situation, because Mick was not in the state to get himself out the car immediately, you know. And if there's a fire or something, who's going to get him out? What a driver, maybe, if that, you know. Yeah. But on the note of a fire, I think it's a great sign of the new cars. So where Mick has split in half, the splitting in half is what caused the Grosjean fire. And they changed the cars this year to have the fuel cell in a different place.
Yeah.
And you do think if that was last year's car, there's that, you know, set into flames. And then, you know, you don't want to think about what happens to Mick.
I really feel like the TV direction could have prevented the long wait for us to see him move, because you saw the car camera from Valtteri Bottas driving up next to him, and he makes a hand gesture to him, and Mick immediately responds, and Bottas drives off. They could have shown us that he was alive and not made us like sit there for so long.
Yeah, what is that? I saw that, but I saw that like 8 hours later.
Exactly, but that was immediately after the crash. Bottas rolled up on him and he gave him a thumbs up.
It was just like, yeah, like, cool. Okay, thanks. We're not wondering about Michael Schumacher's offspring for 15 minutes, just nervously fumbling. Like, what happened?
Something that really got me about it is every time there was a safety car, or, you know, like even just like double yellow in like a particular sector, it seemed like there was tractors and marshals just on the track the entire weekend with just VSCs.
Yeah, that's the thing about this circuit in particular, is it's the only one on the calendar that doesn't have any off-roads for cranes and tractors and things like that. So it's like we're just going back to 2012, 2013, 2014 even. What?
The 2012 counter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. They'll just say 2012 for no reason. Last episode said it was not the right answer, but I was very sure it was the right answer. So I just like the movie 2012. You know, it was an impressive apocalypse movie. But yeah, that's the crazy thing about this track too, there's so many things that are strange about it, including the fact that there's no off-roads for these tractors, so we're just putting them on the track again. There was an F2 incident where that they did it again. There was just cars whizzing by these tractors. So I guess the lesson of this weekend is, if you got enough money, what are rules? You know, what is safety? If you just buy, yeah,
the newest purpose-built circuit,
yeah, yeah,
newest on the calendar,
yeah, sitting on literally lakes and oceans of oil, but we can't afford infrastructure to put some tractors and stuff, or put some side roads where they should go and like adhere to the modern safety standards of this worldwide professional sport. So it's just question marks all around, you know. Even after the crash, you're just like, so there's tractors on the track again. We're doing this again. We're going to do this one again.
Well, even whenever it shut, it cut to Latifi's qualifying shunt, there was literally a marshal running out of the way of his car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was insane.
I think, to be fair, that's more on the marshal than the track. I mean, like, dude, don't stand in the road. You know, I was taught that by the road safety hedgehog when I was six. You know, and particularly not when you're near Formula One cars, particularly not when you're near Nicholas Latifi, who's more likely to end up spinning towards you than most, I guess.
He is. We'll get to that a little later. A little Latifi coming back. Mazepin's not there. So Latifi's just like, he's kind of lost his cover of his Mazepin sheet, so to speak. And so he's just flapping in the wind, you know? The inadequacies are just out there flapping in the wind. So yeah, and I don't know. What do you guys think? Any more thoughts about Jeddah just in general?
Seems like we're going to be coming back here for a while. They were supposed to have that track that went underwater and had like dolphins swimming next to it and stuff done, but it doesn't even seem like they've broken ground on it. So I think we're going to be at the Jeddah Corniche circuit for a few more years.
And it was like purpose built for this race, which is odd that they would just move on to something else so quickly, you know?
I think that the idea, at least in the beginning, was that these were roads that they were going to turn into part of the city's infrastructure. So they were just built to be part of a racetrack, but eventually they would just be roads that you drove on.
Oh, okay. Weird. Okay.
So there's going to be some, like, I don't know, Saudi Arabian driver that's like, why the hell is this road not straight and instead just snaking left to right for about half a kilometer?
Yeah, basically what we should do is have the Formula W grid drive on those roads, and every livery on Formula W can list all of the women still in jail there for driving. But basically they're in jail for driving. So that'll just be how we test it. That's the extent of our political talk for the rest of this episode. How about that? We'll drop it.
Right. No there. Promises.
That was very mature from us for a second there. That was for about 10 minutes. We spoke about geopolitics and capitalism. We were all very well done us.
Yeah.
I feel like we need a fart joke to balance it out.
a good fart, just a hearty fart joke, you know, and then somebody actually fart. That would be a great little look. Checo got pole position. Let's talk about that for a second. In the middle of all this madness, Sergio Garcia with his first pole position of his career. Am I correct in that assumption? That's his career. Yes. His career first pole position. Way to go, man. Way to go. Did he get juked by Ferrari pretty early on in the race? Force him to pit. Yeah, he did. But he got a pole position, and that's what counts. And he was the one guy we didn't see grabbing a pole. I don't know why we didn't, you know? I don't know why we overlooked him so easily. Why did we?
The change in regulations really do kind of lend themselves to him, because the guy's been driving dog shit cars for most of his career, and he's always been really good with his tires. So, honestly, a recipe for success.
It kind of is, yeah. It kind of makes sense.
I mean, he's probably the fourth favorite by some way in the championship, and it did catch everyone off guard. It was almost like a reminder, like, oh, guys, remember me, you know?
Yeah.
I can't see him sustaining it. I think it is a bit of a one-off, but it would just make the season so much more interesting if, you know, himself and Sainz can get up there and make it more than a two-way battle, particularly if it's inter-team. That'd be crazy as well.
Yeah.
He does actually now hold two F1 records. The longest time between starting your career and winning a race, and the longest time between starting your career and getting a pole position.
Those are interesting records to hold too, you know? Like that's crazy that because he's been in the league, man. He's been in the sport for a while, you know? Since 2012, you know?
There we go.
I don't even know if it was 2012, but man, that's the thing. I want to see a four-way title fight. How cool would a four-way title fight be? And I don't even think that Sainz and Checo are that far off the mark. I think they're capable of doing it. I just think they're capable of doing this. And so I don't know. We'll see. This whole season, I mean, we saw a lot of things in this race that we didn't see in Bahrain. I think this whole season is just going to be an experiment with these cars and getting that. We saw in 2014, if you go watch the 2014 season, I mean, the updates that you saw with the hybrid era change, just transitioning into the hybrid era, were just fast and furious. So Checo on pole, Chuck second, Sainz third, splitting the Red Bulls, man. And then you usually see that flipped. And so it was pretty weird to see Verstappen fourth.
It really does speak to how much, like, how the tires are playing into this. The change in tires has been honestly my favorite part of the change in regulations, because it doesn't seem like people are getting them locked in. But before we move on from qualifying, we have to talk about it.
Yeah.
Lewis Hamilton.
I thought you were talking about, you just wanted to bring up Girk McRussick first.
I'm not familiar with this person.
Gerk McRussick, he's the other driver for Mercedes. You haven't heard of him?
Mercedes has two cars on the grid?
They do, yeah. The other one's a driver named Gerk McRussick. I believe that's his name.
Oh, Lewis Hamilton, this is the first time I've actually, not that I've watched a ton of Lewis Hamilton interviews, but he was very much just like, I requested these changes on the car and it did not work out.
Yeah, I think they just tweaked something and then tweaked it a little too hard. James, what do you think?
I mean, as much as he was pretty poor in quali, I thought his race pace was really good. So I think he was thinking about the race. When you put yourself 16th, you really limit what you can do. So he clearly got it wrong. And I think it's interesting to see that if it was a setup issue, George had it dialed in. George had that Mercedes as good as it could have been. And yet Lewis Hamilton was, historically bad in quali.
Is he losing the edge? That's the question.
No way.
Is he losing the edge? I mean, dude, it's a valid question, though. I mean, because he's getting matched by his teammate. We've got a guy, in his fourth season, Hamilton's in his 16th. I mean, the question's not off the table. I'm sorry, is 16th? 14th? When was he a rookie? 2007?
2012?
2008? 2012?
Ding.
That's 2012. 20, Lewis Hamilton's rookie season of 2012. But no, I feel like it's a valid question. I think it is. I think we're talking about, are we talking about the greatest driver in the world, arguably in several categories? Yes, absolutely. Are people going to be, are other drivers going to be able to match his records? Most likely not. So we're talking about one of the greatest drivers in the world, but time moves on. And I think it's a valid question at this point, especially you got Gerk McRussick, out qualifying him. So, I think it stands to at least pose the question, is he losing some of that edge, or is a little too much of his energy going towards those outfits that they enters the track on every Thursday? I feel like it's a valid question, at least.
I think he's always, or at least sort of in the latter half of his career, has sort of made it quite clear that he loves racing, but he sees a life for himself outside of racing. Established himself as this brand. He's got his fashion and his music and his eco stuff. So I think Lewis Hamilton exists outside of Formula One.
His music.
For the record, I think it's an okay song. I was shocked at how good he was when he sung.
I'm not being facetious. He makes music.
Yeah, he really does. He does.
So he released it with, was it Mariah Carey? Or Alicia Keys? It's really strange, and there are certain people that should be banned from talking about sex, and Lewis Hamilton is one of them. Because in the song, he sings in this Justin Timberlake-esque, really high-pitched, really innately sort of toe-curlingly sexual. Mm. And it's fine when it's just a back-in guy, but 18 months after it came out, he was like, yeah, by the way, guys, I put this song out. I was like, oh, Lewis, come on, man. That's sing about money in cars. That's literally you're the one person on earth that probably is more qualified to talk about money in cars than anyone else.
Or don't sing about anything and just not do it. You could. Look, I'm not one to talk because I'm a musician that's also doing a podcast and I do 14 other things. So I get it. I understand the thing. I understand that need to do that. But also, I'm a musician that's done it his whole life and I'm not a millionaire. So I always have a little bit of a salt I'm always a little salty with these athletes that do the athlete thing and they've just got millions upon millions of dollars so they can just buy their way into the music iconosphere. You know what I'm saying? They can just kind of do it. There was a Sean White, the snowboarder, Sean White.
Yeah.
One day a few years ago, he just decided he wanted to form a band. And just paid a bunch of people to be in a band. And they weren't good. They were mediocre at best. But you know what? They were on Jimmy Fallon because he's Sean White, And that's got to be what some of these drivers feel like with paid drivers. It's got to be the same feeling. You know what I'm saying? They're paid. If you're a Formula One driver, you cannot ever complain about paid drivers if you're paying your way into music. That's my rule. I just made it up. That's a rule.
I like that. Yeah. So the industry plants and Nikita Mazepin is the Olivia Rodrigo of F1. It's like the who the hell is this guy? And they turn up all of a sudden they're on the front cover of everything. Yeah. God, it feels weird.
You just titled that episode. Good job.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
the Olivia Rodrigo of F1. Yeah, I guess you can't. Yeah. Just our titles will just keep getting more obscure as time goes on. So, yeah. Lewis Hamilton, mediocre at best, musician, iconic driver. And I'm just to cap that thought, just let's lay off the Hansell outfits while we're walking into the track. And maybe he'll get some mojo back, is all I'm saying. Like, maybe don't wear a shower curtain into the paddock on your way in, and you'll perform better, is all I'm saying. That's just my theory. Everybody else in team kit, while they walk into the paddock, Lewis Hamilton coming in looking like he's got a set of curtains from a mansion hanging off his shoulders. So who knows? I'm just saying, let's throw some theories out there. Let's entertain some thoughts. I feel like maybe let's lay off the fashion for a little bit and you'll get some of the speed back, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's funny when it's contrasted with George Russell, who is, if a shirt and a tie could be a person, it'd be George Russell. So I think, like, fashion contrast there is amazing. It's well done, yeah, by Toto. I think and then Toto, who's in the middle with the, yes, I'm wearing a shirt, but I'm wearing it size too small to show off my muscles. Like, the same shirt all the time. The guy never washes it. It must stink.
No.
But you know the one I mean.
Oh, I know. Toto, I could be the drummer for Rammstein Wolf, you know? Just Rammstein. Just could be the drummer for Rammstein. You wouldn't know the difference. I think he should. I think if Mercedes has another weekend off the podium, he needs to start wearing the black turtleneck for during the races, and just like black turtleneck it during the race. So you cut to him and he's just sullen in a black turtleneck, just being Austrian, you know. And that's his entire aesthetic for the rest of the season. So anyway, the rest of the grid, real quick. Just at least the top 10: Ocon 5th. Gert McRussick 6th, Spicy Boy Nando 7th, and then Valtteri Bottas P8, Pierre Gasly P9, and K-Mag rounding out the top 10 on the starting
grid. Valtteri Bottas was a DNF.
He was. I'm talking about on the starting grid.
Oh, quali. I'm sorry. Yeah. Hey, you know what? I am just so lost at the fact that Lewis Hamilton, one, his musician name is XDNA, two, he was on a song with Christina Aguilera called Pipe.
That's it. Yeah, Christina Aguilera. And it's
I'm lost, all right? Forgive me for not knowing the qualifying order. I am shook. I am shook, guys.
I'm shook. I'm livid. I'm livid that he got to meet Christina Aguilera and I didn't. That's really where the lividness comes from. I want to meet Christina Aguilera. She's still hot. And she's still talented. And that's
as is Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah. So, well, you know, he's as far as musical talent, it's questionable. It's just a little questionable. Top 10, ending out with K-Mag in Q3 one more time. You know, what's going on? This guy's in fuego at the moment. Here for it. Love to see it. Do we think he's going to another Q3 appearance, in Australia? What do we think?
Yes.
He's good there too. He's always been really good there.
He is good there.
He said after quali that he had P5 in him. He was really struggling with the fitness with his neck. And he was really strapped up before the race. And he just looks so good this season, you know.
Yeah.
It was crazy after the race. His engineer got over the phone and said, okay, Kevin, that's P9. Unlucky today. Where, yes, you know, last season, I mean, did you hear what Gunther said about finishing P9?
Yeah.
He said, oh, I'd have... sorry for any kids listening. He said, I'd have fucked the whole paddock for P9 last season.
did you guys hear any of his practice audio where his engineer was just like, Kevin, how's the balance of the car? And he goes, I don't know. I'm trying to drive. Like, the dude was struggling.
Let's talk about Alpine. All right. Let's talk about Alpine. Let's talk about who I think will be P3 constructors this year. And that's my going to be... P3 constructors, Alpine. If my original prediction from the first episode has to stand, that's fine. But my revised prediction, my unofficial prediction, if we make the rule to go with the first episode's predictions, it will be Alpine P3 this season. So let's talk about it. They got a little spicy on track. Nando, I want to call him Spicy Boy Nando from now on, like he's a chicken sandwich or something like that. But he was getting a little rowdy with Esteban on track. It made for good viewing, didn't make good for Otmar Snuffleupagus? Snaffhauer?
Isn't it Mike Crack now?
But is he the guy? No, it's
that's Otmar. At Aston Martin. Oh, yeah, no. It's Otmar Snaffhauer.
Otmar Snaffhauer. Otmar Anheuser.
Close enough.
Saf is close.
Saf an hour.
Sure.
So like saffron.
There's literally two Americans in the paddock, and one of them you can't say.
Wait, he's American? Oh, he is.
Sure is. Yeah, he's Romanian American, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, wow, that's crazy. Anyway, didn't make for his blood pressure levels. Didn't make for good blood pressure levels for that guy. Otmar Ottoman Saffron is what I'm going to call him from now on.
I'm happy with the TV direction of the fact that they showed that. They showed that for several laps. Whereas, yeah. I feel like in previous races I've watched, they would just be like, here is the 1.8 second gap between first and second.
Yeah. Mm. Here's the helmet cam during this just crazy battle where you need to see both cars. But let's look at Charles Leclerc's helmet real quick, and just so you can't see anything but a steering wheel. So, and then let's show you 18 replays during this battle. So,
but beyond that, Otmar had to, you saw Otmar looking a little bit distressed, and I thought it was really funny that they were interviewing him while this was happening. But at the same time, he was just like, BWT is totally going to pay my bonus this year. Because that was all that was on the screen.
Yeah, yeah. It was pretty interesting. James, what do you think about it?
I think I said this last year, I remember saying, Alpine, I think more than any other team, have this great, feeling and unity about them. You know, I think the fact that the team were happy with the drivers to fight, they fought, and then at the end of the race, both people were happy with it, is a great sign moving forward. I think they are probably quietly behind Ferrari and Haas, having the best season of any constructor. You know, they look top of that midfield, I would say. You know, yeah. Maybe K-Mag on a good day or Valtteri on a good day can beat them. But I can't see a world where Haas and AlphaTauri and Alfa Romeo are bettering Alpine. You know, whatever they've done over the winter's really worked and good for them.
Yeah. Is P3 constructors technically best of the rest? Or is that, are you up there for, you know what I'm saying? Where is the line between top of the constructors and best of the rest? Is that typically P4, P5?
You know, I think it depends on the season.
Yeah, it depends on the year.
I think at the moment, P3, if we say Mercedes P3, I can't see them winning the race as they are. So I guess if you finish P3, it's top, best of the rest. But then if Mercedes come good, as we think they might, then I guess you can say P4.
Technically Mercedes is P2 right now, but it was just because the Red Bull DNF on that first race. So anything can happen. But all things being equal, I don't know if they're going to put up the results to stay in the top three. It just depends on if they're able to curb whatever issues they got going on. And if Hamilton's able to start wearing normal clothes into the paddock. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But I feel like Alpine's going to be putting up pretty consistent qualifying results. And if they're able to do that, then we're able to see some really good racing and then some pretty good results from them afterwards, after the race. So, we'll see. I think Ocon's performing really well. I think the rivalry, I think we're catching Fernando Alonso and Esteban at pretty equal times in their career. I think Esteban's really coming into his own with his driving and with his abilities, his confidence overall. And then Fernando is he's not 2005 Fernando, but he's still lightning quick. So you're seeing some pretty close track times, maybe closer than any other pairing aside from the top two, aside from Sainz and Leclerc. They might be even closer to the both of them than Sainz and Leclerc are to each other. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, particularly this season where Charles looks comfortably number one. I mean, I couldn't tell you who's better at the moment. I mean, they both... Esteban, I'm really pleased for him because I think he burst on the scene a few years ago and has sort of plateaued. He's, I think, in danger of just becoming one of those midfield fodder drivers. You know, he's in danger of becoming Stoffel Van Dorn or you know, Daniel Kvyat. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad he's sort of rediscovering a bit of that magic. And then on the other hand is, you know, Fernando Alonso. What more needs to be said about Fernando?
Yeah, I think let's not underestimate or understate the what he's able to learn from a driver like that too. It's a crazy rivalry, but you know that he's getting so much experience, just like Joe's probably getting from Bottas and stuff like that. So you know, you can't really underplay how much you're able to learn from a driver. Fernando's his defense too. I mean, his ability to defend is insane. So I mean, it's he's learning a lot that I definitely don't think he was going to learn from Ricardo. So yeah, we'll see. I'm excited for this. Are they going back to the blue and pink for the next one? So first two races were the pink daddies, and now they're doing the official like kind of blue and pink livery for the rest of the season.
Yeah,
they're doing that. We'll see how that is. It's probably going to look good in the Australian sunlight. All right, okay. Or unless it rains, and that would be wild. We'll see a rainy. Let's see. I want to see a rainy race. I want to see these tires. I want to see these wet tires. I want to see these cars in the wet. Because I feel like the first wet race is just going to be just madness, you know?
I think in credit to the cars this year, particularly where the teams aren't used to them, there's not been very many spins at all, you know, apart from Latifi X2, Mick. I think that's it. So I'd be interested to see whether that would continue in the wet, particularly where they have more the car's more reliant on mechanical grip. Now that you're losing that in the wet, I think it could be really tough to control. Yeah. It'd be fun, I guess.
Yeah,
I think that's where we see like a wet qualifying where Sergio Perez puts it on pole again.
Oh yeah, Lance Stroll, baby, you go again.
never underestimate Gerrit McRusick in the wet. You know what I'm saying?
That's we'll true. Oh yeah, that's true. Mm.
Gerrit McRusick in the wet, full wet tires and a Gerrit McRusick. That's a combo you can't really understate, you know? It'll go a long way. McLaren, P7 for Lando Norris. Race ending P7 after the race. He was quoted afterwards as saying that it was a pretty solid result for him. He's pretty stoked. And it's a you know big step up from Bahrain. He was also quoted as saying that he wasn't really looking forward to another track like Bahrain where there's some slower corners. Things like that, Monaco and whatnot. And he said they're probably going to have a difficult time in the slow corner tracks, but these faster tracks, spas and what have you, they should be able to feel pretty good about themselves. So a little bit of bittersweet remarks from him. And it sounds like they've got some work to do. But it also sounds like they're making some gains, but they're not really exactly going to be up at the front anytime soon again.
Well, you don't have major issues whenever, if your main problem is your brakes, you're not going to have issues on a super fast track.
Yeah.
And if your other main problem is cooling, you're not going to have issues if you're so far behind the cars ahead of you that you're not getting any dirty air.
Yeah.
Because it was also stated that they brought no upgrades to this race.
Nothing.
This was the same car.
Yeah. Nothing at all. Which might be, I was a little, I balked at that a little at first. I was like, why wouldn't you want to bring any upgrades? But also, I think that might be a pretty smart move because, obviously, because I'm not an F1 engineer, they probably know what they're doing. But it just seems like you'd probably want to A-B it at a track because those are very different tracks. Bahrain and Saudi Arabia were very different circuits, a lot of different stuff going on. So it would be wise to A-B it, see what's going on at a faster track versus a slower one. And then they can actually pull a lot more data in and then make decisions. I'm wondering what their upgrades are going to be. If it's not brake related, maybe it's something else maybe they're brake ducts, perhaps. Do they even have those on these new tires? Like actual brake ducts, or are they just smaller?
I'm not sure.
They have this thing that they keep referring to as the cake tin where the entire assembly fits inside of it.
Mm.
And they're like, I saw some up close shots of them. Of their like actual brake assembly thing, and they had like all of these temperature sensors that they had on no other cars. So whatever that means, I'm not entirely sure. But it doesn't seem like they've sorted out their issues, and it doesn't seem like they're going to be sorting them out in short order.
No, not at all. So I mean, we think they're making real progress here. Or this was just kind of a one-off thing with this circuit, or just fast circuits cool, slow circuits oh no this season for McLaren.
Well, I mean, considering it's the same car, I think. whatever progress is made was just track dependent. You know, I think we won't. I stand by my prediction that McLaren will finish fourth this season. I think there's more to come from them. They've got way too much resources, way too much, know-how and experience. They will come good. I think once we go to Europe, I think then we'll see the order start to settle down. I think people will bring upgrades. And once people start upgrading, if you're still not improving, that's your time to be worried. Hint, hint.
Yeah.
Williams, hint, hint, Aston Martin.
Williams has a couple of top-notch drivers. I don't know what you're talking about. Okay. They've got Alex Albon, and then they've got one of the greatest drivers of all time in Nicholas Latifi. So I don't know what you're hinting at, really, to be quite honest, James.
That's true. I heard a rumor that Michael Schumacher used to go to bed in Nicholas Latifi pajamas because he was that big a fan.
Michael
Lavazza pajamas.
Yeah, Michael Schumacher went to bed in the pajamas of a face of a 5-year-old on the pajamas, and that wasn't weird at all. It was not weird at all. It was totally socially acceptable to do that. Reliability at the end of this race. A couple of cars went haywire. Fernando Alonso was one of them. Aaron, your man, Bottas, and Danny Ric, all kind of went out at kind of the same time, which was
on the same lap. Weird.
Same lap. Mm. Almost as if somebody pulled a switch and just kind of like, well, okay, well, these cars are out now. And then it led to a really crazy situation where both, couple of them are like next to the pit lane, but we'll get to that in a second. But overheating issues at the same time with these cars. Ferrari, a Mercedes, and a Renault engine. So we've got similar issues across three different engine platforms, and it's pretty wild. Probably to be expected with these new cars, these issues that happen at the same time, but I don't know. What do you think, Aaron?
If I'm not mistaken, Bottas was the only one who experienced overheating issues. And they were saying that they were trying to cool the car through various laps because he had just made a pit stop. And that's why like the broadcast like cut to him in the pit again because he went in the pits the next lap. They're just saying, cool the car. And then they just decided to retire it instead of, you know, burn up an engine. But if I'm not mistaken, Danny Ric actually lost his drivetrain. So like he lost drive to the car. And Alonso, I didn't actually really look into what happened with him.
What was it, gearbox? It sounded like he was stuck in a certain gear for a while.
Yeah. Nando was just getting a little too spicy. That's what it was. He was just getting a little too spicy that race.
Yeah, I did particularly enjoy that he stopped directly in front of a BWT sign and the car blended in.
Just camouflaged. There's a spicy indicator on the steering wheel of his car, actually. And when he gets too spicy, it lights up. And if he's too spicy for too long, the car shuts off. And that's just their way of making sure Spicy Boy Nando doesn't go off the charts. And they work in weird ways over at Alpine, but that's what they do. And what are you going to do? He's a Spaniard. So, pretty weird issues, I guess. So I stand corrected. There wasn't all overheating. I was thinking it was all overheating for whatever reason. I'm like, what is going on with the engine temps on these things? Really weird that it happened in the same lap. Really weird that you had two cars blocking the pit lane like that and a bunch of marshals out on track. And then, of course, which led to a boggle with Hamilton. That could have been a pretty good cap off to his pretty decent recovery drive, really, from Hamilton.
He was on for P6.
Yeah. It ended up P7. So, you know, I think he lost like four places not pitting when he did. And it was doubly weird because he didn't go for the softs. There was like 10 laps left and he didn't pit for softs. So I'm just like, why? What's going on? Not pitting for softs. That's what I was wondering the whole race is. We've got a safety car situation with like 10 laps to go and nobody's pitting on those soft tires. Were they just out of sets? I mean, at that point, I mean, I was thinking they were just out of soft tires because like who's not going to go for a soft tire change 10 laps to go? That was super strange to me.
I think that part of the issue is they were having a hard time getting those tires heated up. Because I don't recall people running softs the whole weekend. I'm sorry, James.
No, sorry. It's just, I mean, if it was an issue with getting them heated up, then you want softs. I think it was the opposite. I think it was overheating. I think in Jeddah, it was sort of like last season where we had almost two race tires and a quali tire. that the software was quick, but it would only last for, you know, a lap, if that, where it's not like the game where the tires scale quite nicely. I mean, the Mercedes, I'm pretty sure, didn't put on uniform.
Oh no, it's a funny point to make about how the tires are just perfectly uniform. They just like you, because when you plan the strategy on the game, it's just like up, new, and then it just perfectly, just a perfect crescendo, decrescendo down. And then the new set, and then it's just like, oh, and they degrade perfectly. And that's pretty much, if you do it right, it's pretty much how it works in the game. So yeah, it is a very, just laughing at your remark, because it's not like the game at all. They're just, you got to open them up. There's graining and all that stuff that happens when you're on a real track and things like that. And so it is funny to think about. Now it's not a video game. Yeah. These, and they very much don't have these tires figured out yet. That's the crazy part about it. And, Aaron, what you were saying earlier with the tires being interesting to watch this season, that's why it's interesting. It's because the new cars and these tires are just like, okay, well, we just can't use these for the race. This is not going to happen. So we're just going with mediums and hards only. I guess that makes a lot more sense, because I just feel like that's funny too, because I'm thinking of it from a video game standpoint, as if it's the video game, as if it's like box for a safety car, 10 laps left. Oh, I'll just put on some softs. It's fine. Nope. This is a real race in Saudi Arabia with missile strikes happening and like really bad crashes that involve people's lives. So yeah, it's not the same thing. And rubber behaves differently in real life than computer code. So not the same thing, Andrew. Good job. So anyway, yeah, Leclerc and Max battling it out for the win at the end, and how that went. Pretty exciting battles overall. Aaron, you mentioned something earlier about is Max being more respectful to Leclerc than he was to Hamilton, maybe the last 2 years, if you want to get technical, but definitely last year and things like that. Is that a question that should be asked right now? Is it worth discussing? I don't know. Let's discuss it right now. But let's James, what do you think?
I think he is, but I think let's not make Lewis innocent in this party. You know, Lewis was most of the season, I think he gave as good as he got. Also, I think there was that bitterness between the two of them that developed sort of through the media storm and through the team principals. And also, obviously, you know, I'd like to see that race, if that was race number 20 of the season versus race number 2, you know, I'm sure both would have put up a bit more of a fight, but it is a nice break to have the two drivers saying, oh, you know, well done, mate. Thumbs up in. Because I think F1 turned a bit sour towards the end of the last season. As much as it was a spectacle, it wasn't, it was almost a bit sad to watch. And it's so nice and refreshing to have that sort of competitivism, but also friendliness still there, you know?
Yeah. Aaron, what do you think?
I think that there's a lot of people like a lot of people apologizing that Max doesn't need to throw it on up the inside every time now that he has a championship. I do think the driving styles are entirely different. I think that he has matured as a driver, but I do think on a certain level, there wasn't respect given, because Hamilton would back out. And I think he knows that all of these other drivers won't.
You think so?
Yeah, I mean, well, Hamilton does his best to avoid accidents.
Yeah, he would back out at a certain time. I mean, he definitely didn't back out, you know, turn 2 Monza. That was not a back out situation. Imola didn't back out too much. I think a couple of times there's definitely times where he's going to be a little bit more cautious. I think it was pretty even keeled as far as like head to head, coming to a head last year. But Hamilton's definitely known to be reputationally a bit of a cleaner racer. But I think a lot of what the friction that came from last year and the differences this year, besides just being new cars where I don't know if you could throw it into the corner like you can, last year and know that you're glued to the thing, is the fact that I think people forget the context with Hamilton and Mercedes, and then with Max coming into Formula One in 2014, like he did. I don't know how many people are aware that Max almost signed a Mercedes in 2014. Niki Lauda was actually trying to poach Max Verstappen and put him in a GP2 seat when Helmut came in and said, no, we'll give you we'll give you a spot on Toro Rosso next year if you sign for a contract, and you know, we'll start testing you right now. And so they kind of gave him the sweeter deal. And there's, I think there's just been that rivalry with Mercedes for 6-7 years. I mean, I think you're seeing, you know, a Notre Dame, Michigan type deal, Tottenham, Arsenal, if we're going to go, we're going to go in James Turf, stuff like that. I mean, I think you're seeing a classic rivalry between Mercedes and Red Bull, or at least we were last year. You're just not seeing that with Ferrari, because it's Ferrari. Like, everybody loves Ferrari. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're the oldest team. Everybody kind of loves them. Leclerc and Max are kind of from the same school. They kind of graduated around the same time, so to speak. And Hamilton's been in Formula One for a lot longer, and he's been that kind of like Leviathan kind of hanging over everything. And I think, especially coming in with like not having a championship last year, it's just, I think he was just like, screw this guy, I'm gonna take him down. He's won for 6 straight years.
To talk out of both sides of my mouth real quick, I was actually very, you know, heartened to see that Max actually learned after the first time Leclerc let him pass. And then he let him pass him into the final turn, and then ultimately took the lead back with DRS on the front straight. Yeah. And then the next time around, Max like slams on the brakes, and Chuck slams on the brakes, which was actually a pretty funny image to see both cars locking up going into the DRS line. Yeah. But like, it's been really nice to see Leclerc be able to toy with him like that, and then just, you know, sad to see him lose that race. I would have really enjoyed seeing Leclerc get it back. I do think that Albon is a secret agent, which is why he dive-bombed. He dive-bombed Stroll into sector one to cause the yellow flag to prevent Leclerc from overtaking.
Secret agent man. I think Latifi is a plant. That's my conspiracy theory.
Oh, they're both. Williams very much is a Red Bull supporting team now, just with Mercedes engines.
Yeah, James is looking at us like, what are y'all talking about? I posted that from the Twitter this weekend. I hope y'all don't mind. I feel like the very fun conspiracy theory to entertain is that Latifi is a Red Bull plant, and he's just bending it whenever Helmut gives him the secret tap. He's got a little tap on his leg. I'm a Houston Astros baseball fan, so I'm throwing it back, all the theories about
Altuve
having clickers and banging on cans and whatnot. But it was pretty fun to see those last few laps. Wish they would have shown less replays so we could have watched the actual race. But I think that Leclerc move of letting the driver, grab DRS, and then gunning it down is that's the old Chuck move. I think that's been like, he's done it twice already. I think that's the, hey, how's it going? You want to co-host this, or what's up? You just going to look at yourself? Yeah.
Lewis Meowerson.
She gets on my league races and will just sit next to me on the chair on every league race now. She knows that like that when I'm racing, she'll come downstairs and like sit next to me. So I want to get her like a little headset, like a little engineer headset, and just engineer it, you know? It's so adorable. But closing thought on that real quick is I feel like Leclerc, I heard somebody say in the Formula One media earlier this season that Leclerc is more intelligent than you would assume, which made me think that it's implied that he wasn't, which blows my mind, because ever since he's joined, he's seemed to be one of the most intelligent drivers out there, at least from the new crop. So I don't know where this is coming from. This like, Leclerc is smarter than you think. What is it? Just because he has a large neck, you think he's a meathead? I'm not sure what's going on, but like, he seems to be a really smart driver. And one thing's for sure, this championship got really interesting with Verstappen pulling out a win. Let's see, Sainz pull out a win. Hey, Sainz, you're letting me down, bud. What are we doing? So great weekend, cool Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, minus the anxiety attacks from the crashes and missile strikes and whatnot. Let's just go. Hey, can we go the rest of the season without any missile strikes near the track? That'd be great. So I don't know, you know, maybe in Canada, let's hope there's no missile strikes in Canada when you're up there, Aaron. So we'll try to lay off the missile strikes once.
Well, we did see that it was an 18-hour drive to the nearest oil refinery from Albert Park. So
that's good.
We'll be okay.
That is one of the memes.
No, that wasn't a meme. I actually Googled it.
Yeah. We need to make, We're going to make that a Patreon tier. Is if you do a Patreon tier, you'll get access to our WhatsApp thread where Aaron's just tossing 18 memes into the thread a day. And I have to decipher half of them because I'm like, what is even the point of this one? So, but most of them are good. But sometimes you throw me for a loop. I'm just like, what does this mean? What's going on?
I'm deep in Formula One Twitter, guys. Deep.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to hear that.
God.
Is that reverb? Did you just dial in reverb? What's going on? That was amazing. Is there a reverb switch on your microphone?
I moved it by accident.
Turn it up. That was amazing.
Nicholas Latifi, wake up. Crash on that 56.
It's helmet. It is your savior helmet.
Execute order number 6. I'll stop now. Sorry.
That's amazing. Oh man, we all need reverb switches. I should just hook up my reverb pedal to this. We'll just start having on-demand reverb. All right, cool. Australia, the weekend after this one should be fun. Real quick, we're gonna start a tradition. Decided general predictions. We got our ones at the beginning of the season. That's fine. We'll check back in with those at the end of the season. But it would be fun, as Aaron suggested earlier today, to do a little Latifi prediction for every race. Let's see if he finishes the next race or if he bends it again. And if so, what lap was that one? You know, what lap does he bend it on?
Yes, he either finishes or you pick a lap.
Okay, so I'm gonna go Latifi finishes in Australia. That's what I'm gonna say.
Where?
Oh yeah.
Oh, where?
Sorry, it says a lot about Latifi that we considered whether he'd finish or not, and not where he'd finish. Because we couldn't even consider him finishing.
Yeah. Where in the... He just parks in the grandstands. That's where he does his... P general admission. That's his finishing place. I'm going to go P18. P18. He finishes in P18.
I've got a feeling we're seeing the redemption story. I'm going to say P10.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Uno punto for Senor Latifi.
He's going with faith. He's going with hope and idealism for Latifi in Australia. Aaron, what do you think?
I'm going to get really specific here. I think he's going to beach it backwards on lap 16 and take his rear wing off.
At turns 10 and 11, huh? that fast left, right? Yeah. I think if he loses it anywhere, it's going to be that fast left, right.
Well, it's not him losing it. If you listen to his post-race interview, it's the car just deciding not to work anymore.
Yeah, the car just decides.
My dad said I can't do anything wrong.
That's true. He is a paid driver, huh? He's the Sean White of Formula One. Come on, man.
Is he the worst paid driver on the grid right now?
Well, he's the worst driver on the grid, so he's got to be the worst paid driver on the grid. Really?
P10, though.
P10, baby, I'm telling you.
Only 10 cars finished that race.
I actually think about 13 cars are going to finish. I think it's going to be a bit of a... Because it's Australia's really high speed now. Yeah. Now they've opened up the corners. I think you're going to have a lot of DNFs.
Yeah.
I can see it.
Yeah, I can see it too. It'll be fun. Albert Park is happening. And unlike how Aaron made me think yesterday that it was canceled because you sent me the tweet from 2020. So... Not forgetting that one, bud. I'm going to keep that one filed away. All right. And I'm not going to hit you on April Fool's Day. I'm going to hit you when you least expect it. And you don't know when that's going to come. So anyway, guys, thanks for tuning in once again. Like, subscribe on the YouTubes. If you're on Instagrams and the Twitters, go ahead and look us up under the same name, Armchair Apex. And we'll be giving you just loads and loads of quality, valuable content to consume into your brains. James, Aaron, thank you for joining me on this lovely Friday once again.
Pleasure, Aspa.
Pleasure.
Yeah.
RIP Latifi's seat next year.
RIP's. Oh, don't. We're just going to do an RIP every ending too. Yeah. I like that. I like that. We'll keep that. Nora, say bye. Okay. All right. Thanks, everybody.
Goodbye.